This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we get rolling today, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. This is Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best new inventory. I went with Ford. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Terrific service department. I don't care if it's routine, inspections, difficult. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. We get rolling today. Nick Faribault joins us to talk about the Steelers. Nick, first of all, how have you been? Doing well?
Yeah, doing well. Obviously, the first two road games for the season. Some nice traveling to go along with the Steelers road games, but it's been going quite well.
All right, so it's a team that is 2-0, and there's no such thing as style points in the NFL, right? But they have one touchdown and eight field goals, which means there are a lot of drives that when they score that are ending between the 30 and the 35. This has also been a trend in the league. Is it because of no preseason? Is it because of quarterback play? Or is it something the NFL should be concerned with overall with the trend?
Yeah, the trend, I think it's pretty easy to trace back to. So too high coverages obviously take away the explosive passing game.
No doubt.
That, you know, guys like Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow and Aaron Rodgers and all these guys just thrived on, right? And so defenses are stopping that. And so they're letting you run the ball. And here's where it kind of gets sticky, I think. You know, quarterback play isn't what it used to be. You know, the Brady's are gone. Roethlisberger's gone. There's just a lot of top names that aren't playing anymore at quarterback. So you're having decreased quarterback play. You know, a lot of the young guys, you've had a few young guys come through in recent years like Stroud. But you haven't had those superstars significantly. You've seen a lot more busts in recent years than you have success. So that's part of it. Because what it takes to beat cover two, you know, are those backside concepts. So you got to go through your reads. You got to hit, you know, the third read to hit that coverage. So that's part of it. I think the other part, Steve, is there's just not good offensive line play. Right. You know, defeat things like cover two and run those digs and run those, you know, deep seams and run all of this stuff. You got to let the play develop. It's their long-developing routes, and the O-line play in the NFL is just not good enough right now to allow those things to develop. Pass rushers are better than ever. Defensive tackles are better than ever, and that's really what it comes down to. That is why, right now, this league is a low-scoring league. The quarterback play is worse, and the offensive line play is not nearly as good as it should be, and that's why teams are just sitting back in cover two and letting them go.
That's one of the best points I've heard is about the offensive line play. I hadn't heard that part before. Other parts I've heard. The officiating part of it, and I brought this up after the Sunday night game. Texans get an interception down the sideline. Great play. Everybody's excited. Bears weren't excited, but the fans in Houston were excited. Oh, there's a pass interference call 30 yards away in the center of the field. That has nothing to do with the play. Nothing.
Okay.
You're not even looking in that direction. I'm a big believer, Nick, that you only call something that affects the outcome of the play. And to me, you should be holding a flag until you know it affects the outcome. Holding affects the outcome, no question. I got it. Okay, interference affects it. But not a penalty 30 yards away does not affect the outcome of the play. I think they're too penalty happy so far. I mean, I'm talking about officials. Your thoughts?
Well, I would agree with that. I also think you look at, you know, the ebbs and flows of officiating throughout an NFL season, though. And generally speaking, the NFL, you know, gives these points of emphasis before the season, right? okay, focus on holding, focus on defense pass interference or offensive pass interference, whatever it might be. Focus on, you know, the illegal formations. We obviously saw that in week one. Yeah. Focus on these things early, and I think these refs take these points of emphasis to heart, and sometimes it goes over. You know, they jump the shark a little bit. And I think that's kind of what we've seen. You know, you look at the data throughout, I think, the first 4 weeks of the NFL season, typically it's more penalty happy early in the year, just because these points of emphasis are kind of hit on these referees. And so, yeah, I think they are too penalty happy. I also think that's something that happens every single NFL season. But I think you'll naturally see it recede here the deeper we get into the season. But it's early season football. Just like teams are rusty, referees are also rusty. And so I think that's part of it. But I think the NFL, you know, has had a refereeing problem for a while now. A lot of the rules aren't very clear. You know, these guys aren't full-time officials like they are in other sports, which I think is a significant issue itself. So I would like to see them kind of fix those. So there's a lot of things you can do to rectify this issue, but this is probably more of an early season happening with the inflated number of penalties right now.
Yeah, well, there's another part to it, though. You are not playing your players, for the most part, in the preseason. That's where you make all these penalty calls, where it doesn't matter. But because the players, for the most part, are not playing preseason games, it's showing up in these games, and that's, to me, the domino effect that's causing a problem.
100%. And I think you're also seeing that, you know, with offensive production. I mean, you watch the Steelers week one game, and then you saw what Kirk Cousins and the Falcons looked like against the Eagles. I mean, look at that, right? That, you know, yeah. You're talking about all these different things, right? Penalties, understanding the points of emphasis, because the teams get the points of emphasis just like the referees do. So
right. They'll
practice it, but it's not perfect right until you get into a game. And it's the same thing, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the decrease in production too. Just because all these offenses are really rusty. The new on-vogue thing is to not play your starters in the preseason, and we're not seeing these guys really get to who they are until, you know, week five, week six. And that's a significant thing because, right, you have less practice time than you used to. You have a less preseason game than you used to. So it's all significant, and it all kind of wraps into one conversation. But refereeing, officiating, penalties certainly are a part of that as well.
All right, so now let's get to the actual play itself. The Steelers defense shut down Atlanta, and I was with a group the other day, and it happened to be with them right when the Steeler game started with Denver, and the Steelers took a 7-0 lead, and I looked at everybody in the room, and I said, I'm not joking here. They have enough points. Well, it turned out they did have enough points. What has made the Steeler defense to this point so good through two games?
They're just so dominant up front. I think that's what it is. Steve, you look at their pressure rates and their sack rates. I think they're tops in the league, and they blitz the second least in the league. They aren't winning through blitzing, right? They aren't turning up the pressure on guys. T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, Keanu Benton, Larry Ogunjobi, Alex Highsmith, throw Nick Herbig in there too, are all just winning one-on-ones. They are dominating up front. These quarterbacks are feeling the heat, and they are making errant decisions, which is also in help taking the secondary to another level. You know, the secondary looks awesome, too. The new additions, Deshaun Elliott's playing at a high level. Yeah. Dante Jackson looks great. Joey Porter Jr. looks like he did last year. Minka Fitzpatrick is fully back to being Minka Fitzpatrick. It all has just kind of worked perfectly together. Now, they haven't faced great offenses. You know, the Falcons' offense in week two was drastically different from the week one. And then, obviously, Bo Nix and the Broncos look like they're deer in the headlights right now. But the Steelers have just had more talent than these teams, and all these guys are making really smart football plays, and they're just winning up front. They are dominating up front. I think right now, you know, they definitely have a contention to me to be the best defensive line in the NFL. I think they do, just pure talent-wise, and they haven't even started blitzing yet, and I think that's a big part of it. So they've been able to scheme up things. They've been able to disguise a lot of stuff. They've been able to do a lot of vanilla stuff, and so this win against the Chargers is going to be a nice test for them, but they haven't even unleashed what, you know, their full packages yet, which I think is scary when you think about it.
One of the top preseason acquisitions, I thought, off-season acquisitions, was Patrick Queen. Has there been a domino effect just because of his presence on the field that's helped make some other guys better?
Yeah, it's interesting because Queen hasn't even played that well, but he's done a lot of the dirty work, dirty work that people don't want to do. He's been the green dot. He's been the leader. He gets in there and you know, kind of sticks his nose where people don't want to, and it frees up other guys like Peyton Wilson to make plays. And so I do think you're seeing, you know, the team speed aspect of that, too. It's not just Queen. It's Elliott. It's Jackson. It's Wilson. It's all those guys when you're talking about speed. But his addition, you know, to have that sideline to sideline speed, to have that leadership ability. The fact he's only 24 years old with all that leadership ability, too, is really, really invaluable to the Steelers. It really is. And so I do think you're seeing some of the domino effect. I think they'd like to see him play better, too. They want to see some splash from him. But everything they've asked him to do is kind of dirty work stuff adjacent to the game right now. So he hasn't really had a lot of opportunity to do splash. You've seen other guys do it. And I think Patrick Queen has freed up a lot of that. And so, yeah, I think he's had a big-time impact on this team already. And that team speed with having that 4-4 speed in the middle, I mean, it is a game-changer for any defense.
Justin Fields hasn't been turning it over through two games. Big plus. What have been your thoughts on his play and what he's meant to the offense and also what he hasn't meant to the offense?
I really think he's done something that we didn't know he could do, which is game manage, right? He played so much hero ball, took so many bad sacks, made so many questionable plays in Chicago. The fact that he can do that is really important. You know, the bad sacks are down. He's putting up a career low pressure to sack ratio. It's still not great. I think it's still like 60%. You'd like it to be a little lower, but it's much better than it was. I think it was in like 25 last year. So through two games, that's significant. He really hasn't even made a decision this year in the passing game where a ball was almost picked. I can't even think of a play where a guy almost picked the ball. He's been very accurate. His deep ball looks fantastic. He and George Pickens have a great connection going on. I'd like to see the connection with Pat Freiermuth improve a little bit. But Fields has done what they've asked him to do. You know, they haven't asked him to kind of unleash his full skill set, and the Steelers haven't unleashed their full schematics on offense because they really haven't needed to. And so I think that's what he hasn't been. And what he hasn't been is what can he be when he is asked to bear the brunt of the load, right? When he has to make throws over the middle of the field. I think he has six passes over the line of scrimmage between the numbers. I think that's like last in the NFL for 2 weeks. I mean, you know, he's not using the middle of the field. So he's really using the sidelines and quick game and then kind of hitting deep shots to Pickens. And so that's really where he's been strong. He's had great accuracy. He's had good pocket presence. He used his legs to extend when needed. He's been a really good player. You know, he's easily been better than what he was in Chicago, and they're getting better play at the quarterback position than they did last year. The question is going to be, though, when they ask him to take on more, when he needs to make the big-time plays, can he? And I don't think we know the answer to that yet. Is he going to turn the ball over when that happens, when he has to play a little hero ball? When we find that out is when we're going to find out just how much Justin Fields has progressed. But he can game manage, and that's something we didn't know. So he's been quite good through 2 weeks to me. If there's problems, there's definitely problems on the offense, but I don't think he's, you know, one or two certainly in that hierarchy.
Nick, I obviously know the Jim Harbaugh MO personally, so as to how he wants to play. He's got a quarterback in Herbert. Once he gets to the lead, he wants to ground and pound and just suck the life out of you, is what he wants to do. Does this Charger team, the way it's currently built, and they're 2-0, is that a concern for the Steelers of getting behind this team?
I think it would be. You know, I think they'll be able to stop the run game, and it's a very good run game. They faced this run game before many times in Baltimore because Greg Roman is their offensive coordinator. Yep. There is no Lamar Jackson on this team. Justin Herbert can move, but he's not Lamar Jackson. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you think that they'll be able to slow down the run game. There really hasn't been any leaks in the Steelers' run defense. And even though this has been a very explosive offense on the ground for the Chargers, their interior O-line hasn't really played that well. It's been behind Slater. It's been behind Ault. Those two guys have been really good. But the interior of the O-line is a big mismatch. You know, Keanu Benton, Cam Hayward, and Larry Ogunjobi should have big games in this one. So that's a significant area to watch. I think Justin Herbert is like the secret weapon they haven't unleashed yet, right? You know, I'm talking about when I talked about the Steelers' defense where they haven't blitzed anybody. They haven't really disguised a lot of things. Well, guess what? Justin Herbert has less than 300 passing yards for 2 weeks. He hasn't been asked to do anything because they've been running the ball for more than 200 yards per game for 2 games. So he doesn't need to do anything. So I think that is significant. We're going to find out more about the secondary, just how good it is. And, you know, if Herbert and this offense start clicking and can put up, you know, 27, 28 points, that's significant because this Chargers defense is really good, and I still think there's issues with the Steelers offense, and I'm not sure they're going to kind of kink out just yet this week. So I definitely think it's a significant issue getting behind. So the Steelers have to stay ahead of the sticks. They have to strike first, strike early, and make sure they're in this game so they can control and play the way they want to.
The Steelers have a great history of outstanding centers. You're looking at the first couple of games of Zach Frazier. What has he meant, at least initially, to the Steelers' offensive line in the middle?
He's meant absolutely everything to them. He has been fantastic. He looks like a phenomenal center. I mean, you look at what he does. He opens lanes in the run game. He's very smart. He's calling out protections already. He's been very steady in pass pro. For a rookie center to be this good, you know, he has shades of Creed Humphrey's rookie season through 2 games so far. I mean, that's how good he has been. So he has meant everything to them. He's clearing lanes for them in the run game. When they run between the tackles, he has been a significant reason why they have been able to get success in that area of the field. And then you kind of look at what he has done in pass pro. The pressures aren't on him. You know, a lot of the pressures come from the tackle position or miscommunications outside of the center position. He's been awesome. The one thing that you can definitely critique him on is some of the quarterback center exchanges that needs to improve. But Zach Frazier has been fantastic for the Steelers early on. And so I think they should be very, very enthused by what they've seen from their rookie.
Nick, do you see a lot of that wrestling background and how he turns and turns guys at the line of scrimmage?
100%. You see it especially in the zone run game. You know, the Steelers run mostly zone stuff. They'll run wide zone. They'll run inside zone. And a lot of that you're asking the center to scoop block, which is to go out and get that nose, that 1 sec, that 3 sec. And you could see him just get under their pads and turn them. Or if guys try to kind of get up under his pads in the pass pro and try to overpower him, he's had great hands. He plays with great leverage, comes off with that flat back. Everything is perfect in terms of technique, and a lot of that is that wrestling background, right? He was a state champion wrestler, actually, in West Virginia. So he is not any shabby wrestler either. So you're definitely seeing that. I think you see the same thing, you know, throughout the team with, like, Keanu Benton on the defensive side. These wrestlers are great offensive linemen most of the time because they understand leverage, and Frazier's a perfect example of it.
Nick, you're outstanding. We always appreciate any time you give us, and thanks a lot. It's been a great start.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Appreciate it as always.
Anytime. Outstanding Nick Faribault joining us on the show. Our high school roundtable's coming up. Then we'll depress the audience. For Matt, it really is, Cotrillo, it really is a mixed bag today. The Yankees clinched to get in the playoffs, first team to do so. But the Eagles' performance left something to be desired. This should be a wild segment, don't you think, Todd?
Sounds like it will be a roller coaster. High highs and low lows.
I think the high highs are going to be very brief. I think he's going to attack the low lows in such a way where he's going to quote like he's speaking for the people.
You're probably not wrong.
Just such a scary dude. All right, back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Renee, you're up.
Knoebels for two.
The Phoenix, Twister, Flying Turns.
What are classic coasters?
Right.
Knoebels for four.
Tiger Tails and Chicken and Waffles.
What are award-winning foods?
Yes.
Knoebels for 10.
Enjoy ride all day passes.
What are September weekends at Knoebels?
What's better than September weekends at Knoebels? A free May weekend at Knoebels. This Saturday, September 21st, buy one ride all day pass and get one free to use next May. Plan your trip today at Knoebels.com.
For 150 years, the Gratz Fair has been bringing you family fun and entertainment. So come and celebrate with us this year and see why our fair is the fair to visit in 2024. Sunday, September 15th through Saturday, September 21st. Watch the hardest racing on the track Sunday and Monday. Feel the thrill of the Demolition Derby Sunday, Tuesday, and Saturday. Live music on the main stage with the Rick K Road Trip on Monday. New this year, free admission with Fill the Fair Wednesday, brought to you by our community-oriented partners, MI Windows and Doors. Thursday night brings the roar and thunder of the truck and tractor pulls. Come watch the local talent of our high school bands on Friday at 12 in the Cavalcade of Bands. And Saturday, wrap up the week with antique tractor pulls starting at 10 and the Demolition Derby finals at 7:30. So celebrate with us and see why our fair is the fair to be at this year. Visit gratzfair.net for more information.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
With you, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, my two favorites, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. High school roundtable. We start with the battle of the unbeatens. Lewisburg, Warrior Run, Greg Wetzel, already ready. He's already in game mode. He's even wearing pads. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Steve?
Doing great, Greg.
Great.
This start, in some ways, for Lewisburg could have been scripted any better.
Oh, not a bit. I mean, it's like a dream start for these kids. They played some quality teams. Lime Mountain's a quality team. Hughesville's got a nice team. They come out unscathed. They have some minor bumps and bruises, but they should be pretty much healthy going to this game, and they're excited about this game. I was at practice the other night, and practice was good, crisp practice. Kids are have their undivided. I mean, coaches have the undivided attention of the kids, and so it's going to be a fun game to watch, I think, Steve.
How much fun is this for the community at this point? Because you know, there's been some good, there's some but then this happens. Yeah. How much fun has this been?
Well, you know, they have been talking about it. It's growing, Steve, and I think. They get, I'm going to say they probably get 2,000 to 2,500 to a game right now. Mm-hmm. And I think if they win this game, homecoming is next weekend, I think they'll have a heck of a crowd for the homecoming game. You're starting to see the kids come out more to the game. You're seeing community members talk about it downtown. I'm at the golf course, as you know, quite a bit. They're talking about the golf course, how the kids are doing and stuff. So I think it's good. I think they keep this ball rolling, it's going to be really exciting for the community.
To keep the ball rolling, though, against this team, what is on the checklist?
They have to shore up their pass defense. And now, they have played Lime Mountain, who had a pretty balanced offense. And they did a good job of shutting down their run. Warrior Run, looking at statistics, looking at their game film, stuff like that, they primarily throw the ball. They can run it, but they primarily throw the ball. And I think Lewisburg is going to have to get a pass rush on their quarterback to get him out of rhythm, because he has some quality receivers. And Sammy Hall, the wide receiver, he's not a big guy, Steve, but he has over 500-yard receiving yards in four games. He has six touchdowns. He's a quality receiver. And I think one of the things the coaches are emphasizing this week in practice is, yeah, they're going to catch the ball, but we don't want them to get yards after catch. Come up and make a sure tackle. They've been doing some tackling drills this week just to get into that form, you know, of making the good play and good solid tackles.
How important is it, and I know Warrior Run can throw it, how important will it be for Lewisburg to get to the lead and then force Warrior Run to try and throw it like that?
Well, I think that's important, especially since the game's at Warrior Run, Steve. Just to try to take the crowd out of it a little. I know we're not going to have 100,000 like they do at Beaver Stadium, but it does. They can get the kids excited, you know, with the crowd screaming and yelling. They do get the players excited. So I think if Lewisburg can get a 1-2 score lead, that would go a long way towards helping them win the ball game. Plus, it plays into Lewisburg's hands of running the football and throwing when they want to, instead of having to throw the football.
This is fun. I'm glad you're having fun with it. You deserve it.
Oh, it's a good time. It's fun to watch, Steve.
I bet it is. Hey, thanks so much, Greg. I know you'll have a great broadcast tomorrow night.
Hey, thank you so much.
All right, let's turn to the Chief now. This is one of those tough conversations when a team has gone three games and has been outscored 99 to nothing. And you and Kevin have really done everything you can to find every positive to this point. Has there been a constant positive that every game you can point to?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, there's a lot of young kids out on the field, and they're giving it everything they got. And the other thing, Steve, is the defense has played, I thought, exceptionally well. That the score at halftime last Friday night probably should have been 0-0, but we had stopped Williamsport's running attack, and they ran a screen pass to the back out of the backfield on their left side, and the defensive end or the linebacker on that side was ordered to blitz, so they threw the ball to him, and there was nobody there, and there was nobody between him, and they ran everybody off with receivers. So it was a fourth down and about 10 or 15. So just one of those things. It seems like they play well, and one play gets the team either in good position to score or they do score. But overall, I've been very pleased with the defense the last two games.
How tough has it been, though, schedule-wise? I mean, look, that's a step up in class when they're taking out Williamsport. I mean, the timing of it really wasn't the best based on what we've seen.
Talk about timing. We play Jersey Shore tomorrow night after they lost their first game at the old Thompson Street Stadium. And that's not the greatest timing for us either. And last year we were the game right after the tragic loss of Max Engel in that Steelers Grove game. But the timing is I just thought our kids responded very well. They were down. They had a couple of kids that were injured, and the kids have stepped up and filled in. And again, we moved the football. And then there's one play that that just stops the drive, or we're penalty free, and we had a good drive going, and two plays in a row we were in motion. So now instead of first and 10, it was first and 20. Those things really, really kill you. And unfortunately, that's happened more than I think anybody would want to if you were the coach.
Okay, so here's the next part. Sometimes we talk about taking a game, you know, let's win the quarter. Sometimes you talk about taking it series by series. Is it at the point with them where they've literally every play, they've got to be precise every play and start building a play, then build the next play, then to build the next play?
Yeah, that's a good point. I really think that you have to start counting the small successes and stay positive. It's just one of the things that sometimes it's hard for professional and collegiate athletes to do, and it's difficult for high school kids to do because, you know, you have to develop that mindset. And I, 2 weeks ago against Shamokin, I think we started to drive the ball after they had scored, and we had a 20-yard gain, and the back fumbled the ball, and Shamokin picked it up and went for a touchdown. So we were answering that. We were getting a good answer to their first touchdown, and it just happened to be that they lost the ball and we were down 14-0. But I would be happy, and I'll tell you right now, Steve, our kids always play Jersey Shore tough. Mm-hmm. They do. I think before Shamokin, our Shikellamy was the last team to beat Jersey Shore. I think it was our field. I think it was at Thompson Street Stadium, but that was back in like 2018. But our kids play them tough. They don't back down, and you got to be proud of them when they do that. And it'll be an interesting evening tomorrow. Jersey Shore, I think it'll be a little different for them, and definitely be different for our kids. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, and by the way, everybody, Kevin has something he has to have taken care of tomorrow. Because of that, Steve Williams will work the game tomorrow night with Dave. Yeah. Chief, thanks so much.
Really appreciate you. And I apologize. I was working in the yard last week, and time got away from me. So I'm glad that Todd filled in for me.
No, he did a great job, and we were hoping Matt Catrillo had the same excuse.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thank you,
thanks.
Steve. Have a good day. All right, bye-bye.
Now, you can tell Catrillo every week he could work in the yard. What do you think, Todd? No?
That seems to be a little unfair to the boys.
Yeah, it's true, because they do need the extra money.
Well, and that's who'd end up having to do the work anyway.
Pretty much. I mean, you want to talk about a guy that's like, it didn't take long for him in life to transition into a supervisory role. All right. Sealens Grove. One last week, Todd, that's a good win for them because they needed to get back on track. When you talk with their staff, what did they tell you about what they did to get back on track?
Well, the big thing for them was just getting healthy for the most part up front, and they got the two linemen back that they were missing against Jersey Shore. You know, they were able to get they want to get the ball into Gavin Bastian's hands, and they were obviously able to do that. He had three touchdown catches, ran for another one, and had a long punt return. So, you know, it's a matter of health, and it's going to be, you know, we talked a lot about this last week when Schick went up to Williamsport. You know, the teams at Williamsport have played are now 2-14, but, you know, they're 4-0. So I'm not sure we're real sure how good they are yet.
Yeah, so for Sealens Grove, what do they think has been a constant for them? And I mean a constant on the positive side.
I would say it's probably their defense. I mean, Ethan Miller is a two-time All-State kid in the middle, and he has not stopped. He's averaging over 10 tackles a game. And, you know, they've played well defensively, and I think they're probably pretty surprised with how well they've been able to throw the ball. I think that was the biggest question mark in the preseason with losing a three-year starter quarterback and bringing in a sophomore that really only had a little bit of mop-up experience as a freshman last year, and being unsure of what they were going to get out of him in the passing game. I mean he's up over 400 yards the first four games, which is all they really needed with the kind of running game that they have.
So what do you think the key is in this week's game?
I think it's more on Sealens Grove's side. I think they feel like, you know, they feel confident going up there with the way Shikellamy played, defended a Williamsport offense that is probably as balanced as they've seen so far this year other than Jersey Shore. So
especially the first half, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, in the way – and I think they just want to continue to be okay offensively and to put points on the board. I think that, again, like I said, that was their biggest question mark coming into the season, and they were able to put 42 points on the board and limit, you know, Central Mountain scored twice, but one of those was on a kick return or on a long kick return, so they were kind of able to limit them offensively. I just think, you know, they want to get the same kind of effort because the schedule gets appreciably tougher in the back half. They still have Shamokin, Danville, and Hollidaysburg, who are all currently undefeated, left on the schedule.
All right, let me ask you something about Williamsport for a moment. The schedule, of course, as you mentioned, hasn't been great. but they keep winning. So is there a thought process on the Seelan's growth side? Like, we got to get to the lead on this team because they're playing with, look, success breeds success. Success breeds confidence. In other words, make this team uncomfortable for the first time because they are so confident.
And I think that's a good point. I think that's pretty key for the Seals because, again, you know, they haven't played anybody, but, hey, you still have to go out on the field and win the games, which is exactly what they've done. And, you know, they have a veteran coach who's, you know, been around the block. Mike Pearson's up there now who was the Lycoming College coach, who was the head coach at Lycoming College. And, you know, you talk with Dave about the size of the school. I mean, I think they're dressing 80 kids, which is way bigger than anybody, anybody else in this area.
Wow.
So it's going to be, you know, Seelan's Grove is going to have to be able to stand up to that depth as well, because that's not, that's probably one of Seelan's Grove's weaknesses as shown up at Jersey Shore is, you know, they're real young if some of those seniors have to leave the game with injuries.
All right, there's our high school roundtable for this week. We will come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. From Sunbury Motors Hyundai, you'll be busting through the snow this winter with these incredible all-wheel drive savings. Lease a third-row seat all-wheel drive Santa Fe for only $450 a month for 36 months. Choose a 2024 all-wheel drive Sonata for only $29,674. Or a 2025 all-wheel drive Kona for just $28,968. Looking for a compact truck? Sunbury Motors Hyundai has 17 Santa Cruzes in stock with savings up to $1,774. Remember, all new Hyundais come with America's best warranty. 10 years, 100,000 miles.
We're not done.
Lease an 80 MPG Hyundai Tucson plug-in hybrid for only $465 a month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors has 53 Tucsons available. Hard to believe it, but winter is just around the corner. And now is the time to save big money on your next new all-wheel drive Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
36-month leases are 10,000 miles a year with $4,000 down. See dealer for details.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'll get to it more in the last half hour. But you see what Tennessee wants to do with it in football? With tickets?
I did see that.
This is where we are. But the NCAA is, to me, they played a role in this. So let me tell you what everybody, what they're trying to do here. By the way, I got a note. Todd said it's unfair to Matt's boys for all the yard work that he's going to make them do. I'm guessing that's the least of Matt's concerns. No, it's all about... Look, I mean, the guy leads the league in cheap labor. I mean, really. But they're going to tack on next year, it's not now, 10%. Okay, now, why are they putting 10% on there, on their tickets? Well, they're putting 10% on their tickets for what they call a fee to help pay the athletes. Now, you're saying, Steve, why do you say the NCAA is partially responsible for this? And, of course, it's the name, image, and like this is called the talent fee, there is what's being referred to. Because I keep going back to it. What was it, June? Where they approved logos on the field. Okay, and you can change out the corporate logo every game. Whatever. And Tennessee, by the way, was one of the leaders. They got Pilot, the truck stop group, to do that. Okay, good start. And I don't care about logos. Jeez, I do bowl games, Todd. I mean, bowl games, I got logos all over the place. I mean, you know, doing the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, and I'm just sitting there with a Chick-fil-A sandwich looking down the logo at the 30-yard line. Like, who cares? But they would not they tabled and would not approve logos on jerseys. Now, as you know, 2-3 years ago, I said they should allow logos on jerseys to pay for name, image, and likeness. Remember me saying that? And these guys sit there and they wonder why people look at them cross-eyed sometimes. Their legal department gets crushed in court every time. Their legal department, I mean, Killaru, who's their lead attorney in this house case, I don't know if we should settle. Yo, dog! You got a problem. You're gonna lose, and B, the money is going to be exponentially more than it is now. What's he thinking? What are they thinking? A negotiating ploy? What are you negotiating? What's your negotiating ploy here? The judge is the one that told you, not the other side. And then there's this thing about the logos. I was watching a little bit of the Pirates game last night. Don't ask me why. It's for a couple batters. I knew you're tempted, Todd. And they have the Sheets logo, which is red, on the sleeve. To be honest with you, it's very subtle. I mean, you know, sure, it sticks out because Sheets is the red logo. Oh, yeah, we've talked about Chime and Vistaprint and Crypto and so forth, and how subtle, for the most part, they are in the NBA uniforms. I mean, do you know the Star Insurance logo is on the sleeve of the Yankees uniform? It's no big deal to people. It's no big deal. And college football should have been doing it now. Now, why should they be doing it now? So they could get a head start on next year. And maybe it's worth, now we know the Golden State Warriors is $20 million. They're the top out number right now. But maybe that logo in the jersey is worth $5 to $7 million. So let's take the top number, $7 million. Well, that's $7 million less you have to raise and come up with. Maybe it's worth 10 to 12. Well, it's 10 to 12 less than what you need to come up with. Instead of doing this, where you look at the fans and go, heck, hey, we're going to like hike everything up. We need the money. No. Okay, there's other ways of doing it, but the NCAA has to unleash the universities and let them find the corporate help to do it other than logos on the field. They are not, the NCAA is one of the least forward-thinking groups I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it.
Can you think backwards? Because if you can't, they've discovered it.
Well, I mean, in other words, 12-team playoff. Now, I know this is the College Football Playoff Committee, not the NCAA. But we were talking about a college football playoff long before they brought it up. Right? Logos on jerseys. We brought that up 2-3 years ago in terms of trying to compensate for NIL. Now this comes up with the House settlement. It's not settled yet. And these guys sit on their hands. What are you doing? Okay? It's okay to unleash the corporate world in a capitalistic society to take care of a capitalistic problem. Look, I grew up in a business family. And my dad really understood how to make it work. That's why it gets frustrating for me watching this clown show in Indianapolis.